This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
It's no surprise to start by saying, of course, the times are a-changing. And I guess that all of us coming together over a period of years, you know, every time we meet, times are changing. It feels like they're changing more than they ever have before. This is not the first time, and it certainly won't be the last, that those of us engaged in the world of learning will face radical political, economic, and organisational changes. We don't quite know the shape of them, we don't quite know the impact of them, but they are all around us and they are kind of obsessing us. And quite what those changes mean, as John has indicated, for some of the concerns that I guess we share and we hold dear here today, the creation of opportunity, the construction of a robust and a flexible post-compulsory sector that offers a wide range of opportunities to meet the needs of our students is just not clear. What these changes mean for further education, what they mean for higher education, and most importantly at all, at the basis of this, we must never forget this, is what it means for our students and would-be students is also not yet clear. However, I agree with John that this conference is timely because we should not hold our breath. We should not be waiting for clarification. We should be planning. And although there will be financial drivers and financial constraints, what I am passionate about is us being really clear about the principles on which we want to build that post-compulsory sector. And in my session, I'm going to look at some of the vision for that. And throughout the day, we'll be looking what that might mean in practice for the future. So we will learn about fee levels bit by bit, dribble by dribble, and maybe by the summer we'll know what the situation is. We may learn what the numbers are likely to be in the system. We may learn more about the potentially interesting provision for part-time students, and we will see. What we know, though, and all the best indicators would support this, is that notwithstanding higher costs, notwithstanding all those pressures, that there will be more demand from potential students in a variety of ways than the system can support if the system, the university system, continues in its same way. Again, while we're waiting for answers to some of the key questions, I think we shouldn't hold our breath. We're unlikely to hear of the vision that drives learning and lifelong learning in a joined up and affordable way. And frankly, I think it's up to us to articulate that and to fight that and to really push for that. And the responsibility to cater for our students in this changing world, of course, rests with us. So I see our task today and my very small starting point here to ask this question. There will be more students. The system cannot go on in the same way as it is going. We have partnerships with FE and HE and others. How can we look at those partnerships, look at the principles that drive them, look at some of the economics of them, and make sure that we really are creating more and more opportunities? And we will all know, everyone in this room will know, that HE and FE, sometimes it seems like the sun is shining and good things are being said, and sometimes it's cold winds. The government is, of course, suggesting, subtly or not, that higher education might be offered on a wider basis in FE colleges. Attached to that is the kind of rider that maybe it'll be cheaper. We've got all kinds of opportunities and all kinds of risks here. But either way, sunshine or gale, it's our responsibility and I think our task today to be clear why we believe this partnership between FE and HE is so important, what the benefits are to students, really critical, what the benefits are to HE, to FE and to other partners, because we're no longer just talking of public sector partners here, what we believe the fundamental principles and the purposes of those partnerships are, what the best kind of future, given the constraints and given the politics, might look like, and then how we may work towards that, what obstacles we may meet. We won't get there immediately, but I think unless we're clear about what the vision is and where we want this to go, it'll be piecemeal and everybody will lose out. And I think a mark of success today would be if by the end of the conference we do have a renewed vision about what is possible. Now, My starting point is this, and I don't know if you agree with me. In one sense, it's a cliche and it's obvious, but I think sometimes we forget this. Government has changed, political scene has changed. Much, much more importantly, the nature of society and the economy is changing and continues to change. And of course, you know, it is a bit of an old hat to say that the ICT revolution, the global economy, the knowledge economy is changing the way we work. But if we listen to our students and we listen to our would-be students, then they are thinking and wanting to work in different ways. The costs of higher education, all the constraints around that, only make those pressures even greater. So my first proposition is the world is changing in a much bigger way than the local circumstances that we meet, and those are the real drivers, and those offer us some real positive opportunities. But I think there's a second point. And I think we could well argue that given the nature of technology, given the digital age, we could argue that every citizen in the UK, you know, maybe every citizen in the world, certainly that's what Martin Bean from the OU says, needs at some stage in their life access to higher level skills in order to negotiate this ever-changing digital framework, digital landscape. Our citizens, our learners, both leaving college, school, but also throughout all their lives, working or not working, need access to higher level skills, higher education. We are redefining what higher education is, in my view. We could talk about how employers used to talk about R&D teams and now all talk about wanting every employee to be somebody who's innovative, who can work across boundaries, who can work flexibly, and so on. And in order to move out of the recession, we just have to do things differently. And that, I think, is the key to our success. I won't say much about it, but similarly, we know we have a demographic time bomb. We know we have an ageing population. We have masses of research that demonstrates it will be much cheaper for the NHS and the state generally if those people are learning. Not only will they be healthier, they presumably will be the architects of the big society, and they will need higher level skills in order to manage whatever that process, whether it's paid or not paid work, happens. So if you take my premise with 100% of our population needs higher level skills, and you wanted to argue with that and say, well, it's 75% or it's 50%, even then, we cannot continue in the same way with our current circumstances. You know, as participation rose from 2% to 5% to 30%, moving towards the 50% target, it quickly became really evident that universities could not cope with that. And the partnerships with FE colleges, the SURF partnerships that we set up at Staffordshire that have been and are so successful for us, was a way of really beginning to work together to offer opportunities of a different kind in different places in different ways for that kind of demand. The demand is there. We know that significant numbers of students are studying in FE colleges, both full-time and part-time. We know that people want to study locally, and if we go back to the changes of society that I talked about, we know, because of finances, but also patterns of work, people are much more likely, the patterns are that people are much more likely to want to stay at home or in an area that they know, especially if they've got part-time work. It may not even be professional work. It is an income. They will want to have the kind of tutorial care that that the work of the National Student Surveys looking at HE students in FE shows. They get more of that within FE. There is a really growing mix and match, I believe, between the kind of changing patterns of living and working and studying and the partnership between FE, HE. I'm really clear that universities... And I know I'm not a vice-chancellor anymore. I can say this, you know, without worried about being beaten up. I don't know, perhaps I still will be. But I have to face a kind of realpolitik. The idea, and I know that this also is a cliche, but if you just take this as a metaphor, the idea that the three-year course, you know, based, as we know, on the medieval calendar, based on an Oxbridge model, God bless it, it can stay, that's good, but, you know, across the country as a model, with semesters or terms, with long holidays where people aren't going to go on the grand tour, can't necessarily get part-time work and so on, does not fit the changing economic, social communication patterns of our learners, young and older. they're out of alignment. There will always be a need for that pattern and that, but actually, the real needs, the mass needs, the lifelong learning needs, the massification needs are very, very different. And that's where I think a flexible HE and FE system working together, offering things which are, and I really want to stress this phrase, equal but different. And we have to be really careful about the funding between FE and HE. Let's not say it's cheaper because it's not so good in. Actually, National Student Survey would say different about FE, so that we've really got to have something that is flexible, that instead of thinking about institutional needs, history, how it's always been, elite, forgive me, John, league tables, da-da-da-da, we actually start looking at what students want, what learners want, what societies want throughout their lives. Once we establish that as a baseline, then you know and I know and in our talks and our workshops today, what we would be doing is looking at how our existing and future partnerships could very, very relevantly deal with those needs in much, much more flexible and appropriate ways. I think the future is with us. The future is with partnership. I think we do have to include private providers in this. I do think we have to look at quite an extension of e-learning. We do have to take the whole lifelong and skills agenda in terms of work into play here strongly. But the future is on our side. The problem is, as always, with big trends, the short-term economic pressures may push some people into conservatism. There may be a retrenchment. The fear would be that numbers would be taken back from FE partnerships, or the money would not be a fair distribution. We need to be really clear to fight that, not just in its own right, but because there is a vision, and perhaps it's one we really can articulate today and agree to today, there is a vision that this is for the future. We are in education, we are public sector, we are the leaders. It is up to us to articulate that vision. And it is up to politicians to understand the trends of the future. They need to do that for votes and to be able to fund and support that. If we're not clear and we're a bit uncertain and we're fighting around a kind of operational level, not at a big strategic level, then I think the battle could easily be lost. So let's take the starting premises again. They're very simple. The majority of people need access to higher education at some time and different times throughout their lives. This will not normally be a 3-year degree programme in a university or even necessarily in a college with the traditional holidays and so on. So there needs to be a new look at what higher education is. This is already happening through our partnerships, but that needs to be much broader, much stronger. We need to be pushing this. We have known for years, but it's unequivocal now, that our students are customers. The paying, the new fees, or everything, whatever the complexities of the arrangements, the whole concept of being a customer and a consumer is strong. And customers will vote with their feet. They will go to places they want to be that fits their life. And that is where the mass movement is coming, and that is the opportunity for us. There will be a mixed economy. Of course there will. But I certainly see the FE-HE partnerships, the flexibility of a new style HE sector, which might work right across the traditional boundaries of higher education. I don't think it has to be stuck with one group, really will change the face of how we study. So organisations, partnerships in which, you know, we would have no argument with this, but everybody can sign up to the fact that our students, our customers come first. We're not about knowledge necessarily knowledge creation first. We are about our customers and their learning needs and what they want. The flexibility of calendars and timetables, which if only on an e-basis, work on a 24/7 basis. We must work towards that. That is how the world works. We are a global society. We are a communications-led society. Where work is modular, where credits are genuinely transferable. So we've talked about foundation degrees, we've talked about... If we were really able to transfer credits between institutions, FE, HE, and across the sector, then actually we could specialise and we could offer a whole range of different experiences to a wider population. Clearly all kinds of collaborations, clearly all sorts of ways. And of course there are issues comparability or not of pay, the place of research and scholarship. But those are jobs that we have to undertake, and those can be solved if we are clear that actually there is a new future. I'm going to end by just sharing very briefly one story from Staffordshire, which has arisen from SURF, and that's about our university quarter. One of the university's campuses is based in Stoke-on-Trent. You will perhaps know of Stoke-on-Trent's strong BNP presence. The ceramics, mining, metallurgy industries have crashed. Several generations of unemployment, high problems of public health, etc., etc. Pretty run-down campus, pretty poor city, fantastic students, absolutely fantastic. Most of them access students and so on, but that's by the by. And the real advantage that we have in Stoke is we have two absolutely stunning and fantastic partners. One is Stoke-on-Trent FE College and the other is the City of Stoke-on-Trent Sixth Form College. About 10 years ago, we started through SURF planning to come together. We are now rebuilding all our facilities within one campus, the University Quarter. The Sixth Form College has already moved onto the University campus, fabulous, iconic building, the first that's ever probably been built in Stoke, let alone in the 21st century, and that's operating and running. The next builder, Science and Technology block, will be used by everyone. We're sharing our facilities. We are building a community there which will have shared services, a shared curriculum, and I'll say briefly, a curriculum which allows people to move from HE to FE as well as the other way, which is something we often forget, and a vibrant population that is actually energising and making the economy and the city come to life. And we're building now, notwithstanding, because there is the demand, there is the future, and you know we are finding the money to do that. So that's a kind of physical joined-up partnership. That's the sum, really, of a lot of the SURF work that we've been doing. But whether that is physical, whether that is in organisational terms, whether it is in shared curriculum, whether it is in formal partnerships, we have to, in order to revive the economy, serve the learning that we all know is the future of this country, as well as individuals and communities, we have to make these partnerships work. Universities cannot do it alone. Universities have to take a fresh look at themselves, a fresh look at their FE partners. And I know, John, that this room is full of people who are doing this and who are going to make it work today. So I'm very confident and I wish you well. Thank you.